Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome to All of It. I'm Nancy Giles, filling in for Allison Stewart. The Endangered Species Act is widely credited with rescuing the bald eagle, one of America's most popular symbols, from the brink of extinction. Now the government of the United States is introducing changes that would significantly weaken the act and imperil the country's other endangered species. Last week, the Trump administration announced that it would change the way it applies the Endangered Species Act after an earlier draft of the revisions was released last summer. The revisions limit the extent to which regulators can consider the effects of climate change in their decision-making and allow economic costs to factor in when determining if a species required protection. The changes are expected to go into effect next month. Only a few months ago, in May, the United Nations released a report stating that as many as 1 million species are now at risk of extinction. It's hard to say that because it's so upsetting. That includes 40% of all amphibian species and around a third of both fish and marine mammals. The chair of the UN panel that released the report urged that, quote, transformative change towards more conservation was necessary to curb accelerating extinction rates. Lisa Friedman from the New York Times Climate Desk joins us now to explain the implications of the administration's changes. Lisa, welcome to All of It.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
What the heck is going on? Can you like talk me off a cliff here? What else is included in these changes?
Sure. So what the administration did last week is finalize a number of changes that they have called clarifications or reasons of transparency, and really in many ways have played down their significance. On the other hand, scientists, environmental groups, and conservationists say that these are some of the most far-reaching changes, not to the law itself, but to the application of the law, which is in some ways sort of a backdoor way of making important changes. So some of the big ones, you mentioned climate change. The agency defined what is meant by a term that the Interior uses, which is that scientists can make plans for the foreseeable future.
Right, foreseeable.
It's a semantic.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a semantic change, but it has really far-reaching implications because essentially the administration narrowed what that phrase foreseeable future can include, so that, in their words, there's no it limits what they call speculation about what might happen or what they might have to deal with 60, 70, 80 years from now. On the other hand, scientists say that they have a pretty clear understanding of what species are going to have to deal with, in the coming century.
Oh,
polar
my gosh.
Bears are losing their sea ice, for
exactly.
example.
We just passed the warmest July on record. I mean, literally, ice is melting. That's not even foreseeable future stuff. That's now.
A lot of it indeed is now. Another important change to mention is introducing the idea of cost when deciding whether a species should be listed as threatened. So the way the law stands now, when the agency needs to decide is a plant or animal species threatened, it relies on one thing, science.
Right.
And that's about to change. Now, the agency has thread a pretty interesting needle here. It has eliminated certain language in a way that allows them for the first time to do economic assessments. So, for example, what would it cost the country in lost revenue if oil was not drilled on land where an endangered bird makes its habitat? Now, the agency says, look, we have no plans to do that kind of assessment. There will be a strict division of labor here, and the ultimate decision on whether or not a species will be listed will still rest on science. Again, the argument from the other side is, if you're going to have that information, it's going to be used. There's just a general suspicion, I think, on the part of environmental groups that once you introduce economics, you can't help but use that information. And while they argue that there is a place for that, you know, yes, when we make policy decisions, the government should have a good understanding of what the costs and benefits will be. But at the moment when you're deciding whether a species is imperiled, that should be left to science.
Honestly, it is kind of shocking to think that cost is now factored in and science is maybe being factored out. I'm going to jump back a little bit. And can we just talk about when and where and how the Endangered Species Act was actually created? Because I think this is interesting, considering looking back on history and what many people might think of President Nixon. It did come into being under his administration.
Absolutely. I mean, President Nixon, not you know, known as an environmentalist,
right,
or particularly sympathetic to environmentalists, signed the Endangered Species Act into law in 1973. And, you know, ever since then, it has been one of the most important tools that the country has to protect animals, plants, fish, wildlife. You know, there are a number of species that scientists say would be extinct, but not for this act.
Can you describe, you talk about this in your piece, why this was considered a bedrock conservation law? Can you talk us through a little of that?
Sure. I mean, this is the law that, you know, that most of the country's conservation efforts rest on. Everything from the humpback whale to the grizzly bear is protected by this law. And, you know, so everything stems from the Endangered Species Act. Republicans over the years have had a number of concerns about the overreach that they feel that this law has had, and that it has hampered both industry but also private landowners. Last year, there were a number of efforts to change the law legislatively. Those never made it to the Senate, and now that, you know, the makeup of Congress has shifted, there's probably not much chance that there will be legislative changes to this, which is why, you know, there was a lot of hope among Republicans that the administration would take action, and it did.
And that is what they're doing. I mean, do these fall under the category of executive actions, or, I mean, because the law is not being changed, it's just the way it's being enforced. Is that how these rules have been? I mean, they could go into effect as soon as next month. Is that how they were able to get them on the books so quickly?
That's exactly right. I mean, legislation is tough to get, you know, to get through Congress, especially a divided Congress. But you can make changes to the rules that guide the implementation and the enforcement of the law. And that's what happened here.
It's just, it's so staggering. I mean, there's been just so many different things coming out of the Trump administration of late. I have to say that Interior Secretary David Bernhard, he is himself a former oil and gas lobbyist. So I have to wonder, who do you think, whose interests are going to be served by these changes?
Well, you know, I mean, again, if the administration, you know, says that this is an effort to both provide clarity, and they make the argument that this will aid conservation, and their argument go, you know, in part, you know, and this is echoed by a number of conservative groups that work on these issues, is that private landowners in particular have been dissuaded from helping to protect threatened species on their land because of the onerous regulations, and that by relaxing some of these regulations, It will encourage private landowners to get more involved. You know, obviously on the other side, you know, environmental groups very much believe that this will open up land to drilling, to mining, to other, you know, business interests
right.
that, you know, that they fear will take precedence over the protection of plant and animals.
I'm speaking with Lisa Friedman from the New York Times Climate Desk, and she's explaining some of the implications of the administration's new changes to the Endangered Species Act. Lisa, in May, the UN released a report that said a million plant and animal species are now, that's right now, at risk of extinction, and they urge governments to take action. So is this the Trump administration's response? This seems to fly in the face of something dire that's going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, there it seems to be. The UN assessment that, you know, that you mentioned, I mean, it was a pretty dramatic warning that, you know, that humans are altering the natural world, they said, at an unprecedented pace. What we've seen from the administration is a systematic rollback of regulations, not just on endangered species, but on pretty much everything that touches the issue of climate change. Earlier this summer, the Environmental Protection Agency rolled out a regulation that significantly weakens an Obama-era one on the emissions that come from coal-fired power plants, the greenhouse gas emissions from coal-fired power plants.
Right.
There's currently a very heated debate over new regulations that will weaken standards on automobile tailpipe emissions. And in the coming days, maybe even later this week, we're expected to see out a regulation that would essentially end the direct regulation of methane emissions, another powerful greenhouse gas. So step by step, these efforts to rein in the United States' share of emissions are really either being dramatically weakened or eliminated entirely.
I mean, I'm trying to remain neutral as I listen to you, but it's so many of these initiatives by this administration, they seem to be contrary to just logic. Like, why would you want to put more bad air and fumes? I don't even get it. Are they facing legal challenges? Are the Democrats, is Congress, are environmental groups challenging the Trump administration's new policies?
All of these are facing legal challenges.
Will that slow down the effect of this, maybe? Will it be able to slow things down, do you think?
You know, I think that it really depends on how fast the courts act, and that's really an unknown. You know, in the case of the Endangered Species Act, for example, if there is to be a challenge, if there is to be a challenge that that blocks or slows this down, it would be in the courts because, like I said, I mean, though Democrats are taking legislative action and looking for ways to stop this legislatively, while they might have some movement in the House where Democrats are in control, this isn't likely to pass the full Congress because obviously Republicans control the Senate. So any action would really be left to the courts. Same thing I'd say in, you know, with some of the Environmental Protection Agency regulatory rollbacks. We've already seen 29 states and cities announce that they are suing to stop the administration's efforts on power plants.
Right.
And, you know, with automobile tailpipe emissions, it's a very different but very interesting story where you have a number of automakers and a growing number of automakers in an unprecedented move telling the administration, we don't want these rollbacks to go as far as you are taking them and, in fact, cutting a separate deal with the state of California.
It's amazing. If we had a, I just want to end this on something that's a little more positive because it's so frightening. Under a different administration, let's say, let's pretend, how could something like the Endangered Species Act or something similar to that be built upon? What could be done to make it stronger, better, faster?
You know, I mean, I think that's something that if there is a new administration would, you know, there would be a lot of thinking about, and I think in a lot of corners there already is some thinking. We're seeing a number of Democratic presidential candidates come out with climate plans that include ways to strengthen both regulatory efforts on emissions from sources like factories and power plants and cars, as well as the Endangered Species Act. And I think one interesting thing to note is that it's not just automakers that are pushing back on some of these regulatory rollbacks. In a lot of areas when it comes to climate change, what we're seeing are businesses, affected businesses that one would expect to be perhaps champions of deregulation, saying, no, we are prepared and we are willing to address climate change with these methane regulations that I mentioned. I mean, we've seen Exxon and Shell tell the administration methane should be regulated.
Wow.
There's
a light at the end of the tunnel.
Dynamic.
Yes. Oh, my. Well, we'll have to leave it there with Lisa Friedman, reporter on the New York Times Climate Desk. Thanks so much for joining us today on All of It.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, Irish comedian and actor Aisling Bea talks about creating and starring in the new series This Way Up, premiering today on Hulu. More after the break, so stay tuned.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.